You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning is on now.
The dramatic sound for hour number three. I love that sound, George. Gets me hyped, fired up, ready to go for hour number three. And gonna take it off the fantasy focus for a second, because it's now a constant debate, and I figure it's time for you and I to weigh in on it. More you. I'm going to put you on the spot. What would you do? I know you're not an NBA guy, but it's become an issue. It's getting to a tipping point, I think, where the big stars in many instances are being rested by their head coaches. NBA schedule can be kind of long, kind of grueling. So it's become in vogue the last several seasons for coaches to rest some of their big players. Last night, the Cavs rested for the second straight Saturday night, an NBA team rested its star players during a primetime nationally televised game. This time it was the reigning champ Cavaliers who sat their big three of LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love in a 108-78 loss to the Clippers. Last week, the Warriors sat Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and Andre Iguodala for their Western Conference showdown against the Spurs. So these are big games on ABC. It's really putting the networks in a difficult position because they're promoting these stars, and then the coaches are resting them. They sort of have every right to do it as currently constituted, but what are your thoughts on it? First, give me your perspective, and I'll ask you a few other questions.
Well, you're right. I mean, the coaches have every right to do it. They're coaching their team. They're doing what's best for their team. I mean, right? If they think this guy needs to rest that day for whatever reason, because maybe they got a little nagging injury there and they want to make sure he heals up. It is a long NBA season. Hockey, same thing. Baseball, same thing. So I completely get it. I really don't have a problem with it. I think what you may want to do is let the coaches know, could we not rest them during the national televised games? But even that's tough, because like I said, suppose it's because it's three quarters rest quarter because they have a bad ankle. Yeah, yes, he could play, but I don't want to push him. And I get that. As long as the coaches aren't purposely doing it to screw the NBA, which wouldn't make any sense because you're taking money out of your own pocket, obviously. If the ratings go down, the cap goes down, contracts go down, and your contract as a coach goes down as well. So it doesn't make any sense. Like I said, I think you could sort of please don't do it just for the sake of doing it during a national televised game, or realize what's going on here, that maybe you want to play your best player. It's good for all of us here. But I don't know in the end there's anything you can do. What are you going to do? Say, you need a designation now. Like we have football, we don't have probable anyway. We have questionable and doubtful. Well, what do you need now? Probable, questionable, doubtful, rest? But there can be no rest designation during a national televised game? Is that fair? Because some teams are going to have more national TV games than other teams. So how does that make any sense? I don't know if there's any way around this. Truly, because even if you said, okay, you can no longer have any more rest days. What you're going to see is, well, Steph Curry didn't play tonight because he didn't feel well.
Yeah.
And let's face it, not feeling well could be you're tired.
Yeah. Yeah. It absolutely can be the case. The coaches have one responsibility. That's to try to win a championship, right? That's it. All the other stuff is noise and a part of the job, and it can be difficult, but they have one goal, right, is to get their team to competing and winning championships. And if they feel like resting players, look, I know these guys get paid millions and that they stay in 5-star hotels and they're traveling, private charter jets, whatever it might be. But the NBA season is really long. I understand it. And ironic about it is that the NBA as a community, has become very dedicated to analytics of all kinds. And then many of them show that the travel schedule for NBA players, and I've seen this quote from doctors that have helped teams to study the analytics, it's effectively the amount of sleep that they get on some of these trips is effectively like asking them to play hungover. So they give the players a little bit more rest. They can perform at a very high level later in the season, which is really what we're trying to do. Like, we know how good the Cavs are. They're one of – they'll be in the Eastern Conference Finals. Basically, they can get there with their eyes closed as long as they stay healthy. The Warriors is the same thing. Clearly, the Kevin Durant injury notwithstanding. Frankly, the team that got to the finals last year didn't have Kevin Durant and nearly won it. We'll see. But I digress. But I don't know what you can do. But what I would say is that it's becoming an issue for the networks. And the networks have shelled out billions in order to broadcast the NBA. And it is now putting them, the league's most significant partner, in a bad spot. And I absolutely think that somebody from Disney could call Adam Silver and say, we're done doing this. We're not going to pay you for the product because we're not getting what we were promised or what is mutually expected to be a legitimate product. Now backups are playing when I promoted LeBron James for a week. True?
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. I think a TV Nets, I'm sure that's already happened.
I guarantee it's happened.
This has probably happened last year. The networks are always complaining. And let's face it, networks run sports. There's a reason why the NFL playoff games are now on Saturday nights now rather than the traditional 12:30 and 4 o'clock back in the day. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why there are no more day World Series games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in baseball, same thing. Networks want the nighttime. They want the ratings. They want the money. And it's hard for the players can't complain about it because that's how you get your money.
No kidding.
You know, so I don't want to hear about it from the players. Fans can complain all they want. And listen, I complain too. But in the end, you know, it's they don't care. You know, the owners don't care. They're not worried about the fans. Fans are going to come. They're going to watch the games. They're going to pay for it. They're going to pay for the tickets anyway, no matter what you do. So, you know, that doesn't matter there. It's going to be interesting to see what could happen here. Because, like I said, what kind of rule can you make? Let's say Stern says right now, no more of this. What kind of rule can you put in place that gets rid of this? Because like I said, you could say no more rest days during national televised games. Oh, Curry doesn't feel well, has a stomach ache, has a bad shrimp.
Yeah.
You know, you could easily say that. How do you prove that's without their lying?
Yeah, it's nursing an ankle sprain. You know, just his ankle,
right, nursing
his
an ankle
sore.
Sprain.
Ankle sore. We want to give him a couple
ribs
of days.
Ribs hurt.
Yeah.
Has a headache.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you prove that wrong?
Well, yeah, migraines, migraines, stomach flu. I mean, you can think of a million things that, frankly, they'll never be able to find out, barring somebody blowing the whistle on them. So,
I think honestly, Mike, all you can do is just go to the teams and stress, hey, we don't mind you taking the rest. Please don't during a national televised game unless it's 100% necessary. I think that's something that can be stressed, and I think a coach should take that into consideration because you mentioned TV is your partner. It is the reason these players are getting so much money. It's the reason you're getting so much money as a head coach. So it does benefit all. But once again, I think you put up the most important thing here, Mike. What is a coach paid to do?
Win. He's got to win. If he doesn't win,
he's going to do what he does
fired.
His best. What he thinks is best. Right. It's his job. The player's still going to play. He's going to play somewhere. The coach may not have another job again. So he's going to do what he believes is in the best interest of his team.
Yeah. From what I've heard and a couple of things that I've read, and it's all kind of hush-hush rumor type of stuff, so there's no way to really confirm it, but it seems like Silver has already had those conversations in order to try to get teams to rest their players at home. Because, you know, the Cavs are only going to L.A. to play the Clippers twice a year. So those people are waiting on those tickets, especially in a place like L.A. You know, people pay big, big money in order to get, say, second row, front row seats to watch LeBron play the Clippers. And, I mean, he's there. So you get to see him, but he didn't play. Kyrie Irving didn't play. Kevin Love didn't play. Kevin Love played college basketball for a year at UCLA. So ultimately, I think you could stress that please just rest the players at home, but I think the teams would fire back and say, well, these are our season ticket holders, and they pay big money, and I'm not going to ask the coach to do that.
They're not going to upset their home fans.
That's right. But you could debate it forever. The league could say, well, they do get to see them the other 36 home games that you're not resting them. You know, it's a difficult thing, and I don't know how it gets sorted out. I think potentially that them resting players at home, you could start to see a little bit more of that. It'll all be off the record sort of thing, but man, it's just, it's built to a point where the networks, I mean, as you said, they are what has made sports such a huge moneymaker. They pay big rights fees. We're seeing the NCAA tournament. They're paid into the billions. CBS and Turner paid into the billions for the rights to the NCAA tournament through like 2032. We don't have to go over the NFL and the NBA money, but the NBA money, the reason the salary cap has jumped in the manner that it has is because the international and domestic television rights have exploded. They have billions of dollars flowing in now that they didn't previously have. So when you look at NBA free agency and guys getting paid $20 million annually and they're not even all-stars, that's why. The NBA is fast becoming the most global sport that we play here outside of soccer. I say here because, you know, let's face it, the NBA is a bigger deal than MLS right now. And that will continue to be the case. Until the television model, until that bubble finally bursts, money's going to keep flowing in. And I just don't know. We've seen this here, George. We've seen it in college football when college football moved the Final Four, I hate to call it that, the college football playoff to New Year's Eve, and basically ratings tanked by nearly 40% because it was on New Year's Eve. And who the hell is sitting around on New Year's Eve watching the games that they didn't even realize weren't on New Year's Day? It ruined the ratings, and they've made adjustments over the long term. It'll start going back to New Year's Day. Leagues make adjustments. Organizations need to make adjustments based on keeping their partners happy. Yes?
Absolutely. Of course they do. I'll say it again, TV money drives professional sports.
Yep. That's it in a nutshell. So just wanted to get your thoughts on it. I think it's an interesting topic, and it is really something that I look at curiously. Like, I don't know how to fix it. Everybody likes to call into radio shows, and if you want to call us to talk about this, feel free at 844-843-6879. That's 84-FNTSY, or hit us up at FNTSY radio on Twitter. So and people like to see her and say, I've got the solution. They raise their hand and come up with a plan, and you and I can shoot it apart in 30 seconds flat. So it's difficult, especially when you're talking about the type of money and the type of people are involved. I'm talking about the type of people are the commissioner and Bob Iger, who runs Disney. So, you know, that's not, I'd like to be a fly on the wall of that conversation. I'm sure it wasn't pleasant for Adam Silver. In any event, good discussion. We'll get back to some MLB prospects and their outlooks for 2017 after this. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. And George, I'm just reading your tweet. You had going back with our boss, Mike Cardano, on Twitter. And he stated, if Jay Cutler signs with the 49ers, then the Niners will have the Bears' entire 2016 depth chart. Which is true.
And that's not a good thing.
And you said, I'm sure Hoyer would be thrilled. And I had the exact same thought. Like, can you imagine Hoyer leaves Chicago, goes to San Francisco, and then Jay Cutler follows him there? He'd be like, you got to be kidding me. Like, what? I didn't like playing with the guy in the first place, and now I got to deal with him again out here. I'm with you, though. That won't happen.
I can't see Kyle Shanahan wanting a quarterback. And this is not a knock on Cutler, but Kyle Shanahan has to realize, we're not going anywhere. Why would I want to bring in Cutler? He's not the answer, long-term answer here. Might as well stick with Hoyer, probably drafting a quarterback at number two overall, assuming they don't move out of that spot. And then either Hoyer starts, or that rookie starts, or the rookie eventually starts. You grow from there. I don't know if you want Cutler as the mentor to your young quarterback.
No, God,
you know,
no.
I would think not here. So I don't see him ending up in San Fran, not unless Shanahan and John Lynch are like, hey, we got a shot this year. We're going to beat Seattle. No. You know, we got to get that veteran quarterback in here. I don't see that happening.
You don't sign six-year deals. You know what I mean? Like, that's a six-year deal that they got. those two guys, both Shanahan and Lynch. This is a long-term deal. You know, they brought in Pierre Garçon, but that's a leader that I think... Listen, I've heard Bill Polian...
Shanahan's worked with him before.
Yeah, and I've heard Bill Polian speak well of Pierre Garçon, like a really professional guy. And as you said, Shanahan did work with him.
I'm so surprised Garçon actually wanted to sign there.
I kind of was too, but he got a good deal.
Right, money.
Yeah. Could he have gotten more money elsewhere? Maybe, but good place to play. He's out of the gong show. You know what I mean? Like, he's just... It's crazy that that team is on the cusp of the playoffs and they're as dysfunctional as they are. And it all is because of the one position. It's what we constantly talk about. They can't get it sorted. Cousins is going to end up making $44 million over 2 years, but they don't really want him, and he doesn't really want them. So it's this big, dramatic, it looks like a divorce waiting to happen, and who knows, you know? There could be a blockbuster trade at the around draft time, but I don't expect it. It wouldn't stun me. It would be big news, but ultimately I expect him to be the quarterback in Washington for 2017, and we'll see what happens long term. Does that sort of
seem to you? I agree with you there.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything you said I agree with, but I also think like this. They have to know, Washington, that he's gone next year, right? You're not going to franchise him for whatever the next franchise favorite. I think it's plus $30 million.
But what if he plays his tail off and they're like, all right, that's it. We're convinced now. Six-year deal,
whatever.
But
you said he doesn't want to play there.
I know.
He'll get that money from anybody.
That's right.
Right? I mean, Kyle Shanahan does love him. He seems to want to play for Shanahan. He said he did. He wants to be traded to San Fran. So he'll get that money from San Fran. So I don't know. I keep wondering here. If you're Washington and San Fran is offering the number two overall pick, it's either, you had that come to Jesus moment. You're not a Super Bowl team anyway. Even Cousins, you said, plays his tail off. Yes, you can make the playoffs, but you're not beating, Seattle, Atlanta, the Giants. You might beat one of them. You're not going to beat all of them to get to the Super Bowl.
He'll be 29 this year. So if you sign him as a free agent next year, he'll be 30 when he's starting with the new team. Ostensibly 30. I mean, that's not young.
No, it's not. And you're talking a 6-year deal would take you to your mid 30, but for a quarterback, they can play that long.
Yeah.
But my point would be, since you know you're not going to go on a Super Bowl run, probably with Cousins this year, not really his fault, it's more of a team around him, are you better off taking what San Fran will give you, if it's that the number two overall pick, and other picks I imagine would come along with it, rather than losing Cousins after this year for nothing? Yes, you'll probably have to eat it this year. And maybe giving up everything from Robert Griffin a few years back is scaring you a little bit, where we couldn't get the quarterback right, and you think they might do it again at number two. So I just wonder, if it's in the back of their heads here, all right, great, we'll have a much better season with Cousins this year, but he's gone at the next year anyway. He's not going to sign with us, so we know we're not going to franchise him for whatever the fee is. So he's done. Even if we transition him, he'll still sign. San Fran will give that up to sign him. We know that. And maybe next year we don't get the number two overall pick. Maybe it's the number five overall pick. San Fran will still be terrible this year.
If they traded that number two pick to Washington, and Washington gave up Kirk Cousins, and they took one of the young QBs,
and he bombed.
There would be. I'm telling. Even if just that happens, there would be a revolt in Washington. I think people will lose it. The fans really like Cousins.
Yeah, well, he seems to be a good guy. Because let's face it, he can make life difficult, too, on Washington by not signing the franchise till he absolutely has to. Don't show up for OTAs. Show up late in camp.
Yeah, he hasn't done any of that.
He can really make life difficult, and he doesn't do that. So I can understand why the fans like him. He's unhappy. And listen, I get why he's unhappy in NFL terms. In real life, like you said, $44 million. I ain't feeling bad for you, but I get it. With it, if he goes to gets that long-term contract, he'd have $75 million guaranteed. I get it. But he could make life so much difficult, and he decides not to. I guess that's good for him in some ways.
I mean, listen, it just behooved him to sign that, make things easy. He's got $44 million in the bank over 2 years, and he can kind of move on. And playing the public angle. He said he came out recently, he was on Adam Schefter's podcast, and he said that he didn't ask for a trade because there's rumors that he asked for a trade. He basically said that he went to the owner, Snyder and to Bruce Allen and said, what are your long-term plans? They said he conveyed that they reiterated their belief in him long-term, and it was just a matter of working out the finances long-term. I don't really believe there's parts of that I don't believe. I can't say Cousins is flat out lying that they said that, but I don't know that they believe that. If they had a long-term commitment to Kirk Cousins, he's a quarterback. It would be done. It would just be over, and it wouldn't be a discussion. I don't know what that is. Maybe that was Scott McLuhan, who they just recently fired, was the fan of Cousins, and maybe them not so much. There's been a lot of different stories coming out of there, which is indicative of this the gong show that they are. But, you know, that's the reality, right? The one thing that you and I could say is that if they really were totally committed to him long term, he'd have the same deal that Eli and Ben and whomever else has. Yes?
Of course it would be. We see that over and over again in the NFL. Teams take chances on quarterbacks all the time. And like as far as Cuts is concerned, he's done it 2 years now. What are you waiting for? I mean, I'm not saying he's great. You know, he's the next great all-pro Aaron Rodgers. I'm not saying that. But he's not a bomb either. You're going to lose him. And in today's NFL, you need a quarterback. At the very least, he can help you compete. I mean, does Washington believe they have somebody better on their roster? Really? Colt, whatever his name is? McCoy? No. You're not going to draft a quarterback. So where are you getting a quarterback from? If you're not going to make a trade with San Fran to pick a quarterback early, where are you going to be next year? Are you going to hope that you're going to be able to sign a quarterback that's going to be rich and free agency like it was this year? Where you had all these guys available, you know, a Romo type? That doesn't happen every year. So, like I said, I am lost as to what Washington's thinking here.
Yeah, so just I'll summarize for Washington since we're on this topic. Vernon Davis comes back. They re-sign him to a deal. Ziggy Hood, Winston Painter, offensive tackle. All those three guys are re-signed. They bring in Chris Carter, Terrell McLean, Stacy McGee, Terrell Pryor, and DJ Swearinger. That guy talks more than anybody in the whole league, Swearinger, and got him cut from Houston. In any event, they bring in all those guys. They lose Chris Baker, who's a defensive end that they really liked. They lose Pierre Garçon. They lose DeSean Jackson. All three of those players are ranked in the top 26, according to NFL.com's top 101 available free agents. So, on a base level, they did add some defense. They did add some depth and retained some depth, particularly on the defensive line. However, they'll have to address offensive line a little bit during the draft. And now the wide receiving core, by any measure, is weaker. I know everybody likes Jameson Crowder, and we'll see what Terrell Pryor can do, considered to be a top 10 free agent. But on a base level, isn't the offense weaker now on paper than it was a year ago?
Sure, but it's good.
It is good.
Yeah, it's still better than average. I'm not really worried about the offense. I mean, Cousins, we know, will be there. We think he'll be there. The running game is average, but it's not poor. You know, Kelly, Thompson, Matt Jones. I mean, they'll get the job done. Do I receive a court? No doubt it's weaker. You lose DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon, you're weaker. But I like Terrell Pryor. I think he'll be fine, assuming the chemistry is there with Cousins. I like him. Crowder, we'll see how he does as a number two now, not a number three, sort of under the radar guy. Number two, Doxson needs to step up, you know, and be that rookie wide receiver. We don't know about him. Tight ends are very good. Reed, stay healthy. Stays healthy is great, but he gets hurt every season. We know what's coming. But they signed Vernon Davis with a bounce back. So they actually go to a two tight end system if they wanted to. I don't think they will, but they could. The defense, it's to me, all right. I mean, it's average at best. For God's sakes, Josh Norman has to follow the number one wide receiver wherever he goes. Do you have to train your defense on this in training camp and OTAs? Get them used to it. Yes. If Odell Beckham's going to the left, that's where Norman's going. Going to the right, that's where. If Odell Beckham's on the sideline, then Josh Norman should be sitting next to him on the bench. It's really that simple for me. And you have to train the rest of your defense to get used to that. So Breland has to get used to playing right cornerback at times if Josh Norman's following him all around. That's how I'm training this defense to go. I want Norman. I'm paying him all that money. He's going to be following Beckham, following Bryant, following Alshon Jeffrey in that division all over the place. I think it's silly that he's not. You're paying that guy to be a shutdown corner. Let him shut down the top wide receiver over and over again, and so fix your defense that way. That's how I would approach it, and hope you have enough pass rush.
Yeah, I mean, Terrell Pryor last year in full point PPR leagues. And again, I'm just looking at league that has some yardage bonuses. He finishes the 25th wide receiver. Pierre Garçon was right behind him at 28. He finished one spot behind Adam Thielen. Just mention that because we talked about him earlier. So would you put Terrell Pryor in that wide receiver two conversation going into 2017 because of his new landing spot?
Yeah. I mean, I like Pryor a lot. Why Cleveland let him go for $8 million? Why not at least franchise him, trade anything? Why let him go for nothing? Something doesn't make sense there.
It doesn't.
I mean, seriously, Mike, this doesn't make sense to me.
It's the signing. It's the signing of all signings that makes the least sense to me. The market I'm surprised about, but that's me not, you know, frankly, I'm not sitting in a GM's chair. So the market didn't make sense to me based on what other guys got, but it makes even less sense that a team that could have had him for as little as he had, and he's breaking out, and he played college ball there, like all these things. It just kind of makes sense. Like, we can't keep him for $9 million?
But yet you're going to eat Osweiler $16 million?
Right.
Which I have no problem with that, what they did there. You bought a pick, fine. But you let Pryor go, who was great for you, who said all the right – I mean, I understand it's because he says he wants to start playing in Cleveland. Doesn't mean he does. But he seemed to be really true about it. He played with Hugh Jackson in Oakland, followed him here. So everything seemed to be true about this. And then you let him go for $8 million? It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all. What was happening there? I think there has to be something behind the scenes that we didn't know. Has to be. I don't know what that might be. Maybe he wasn't getting along with the offensive coaching staff. Maybe he's missing meetings. Practice habits were bad. I don't know. But nothing else makes sense here. To put up those kind of numbers with that quarterback crew, you don't let that younger talent go.
Yeah.
Not for what he ends up going for. Not with at least getting something back in return.
Yeah, and I would
like
mention,
I said, if you put the tag on him, mm-hmm. you don't want to match the contract, fine. But nothing else makes sense to me.
Yeah, and I would mention that Jameson Crowder, who we talked about earlier, he actually finished top 15 wide receivers in PPR leagues.
He died at the end, he slowed down, which makes you wonder.
I was just about to say, he slowed down badly in weeks. In week 14, he had 7 points. In week 15, he had 6.8 points. And 14, 7 points. 15, 6.8 points. In week 16, 1.3 points. So December was rough for Jameson Crowder, and it hurt fantasy owners a lot. But he got you, you know, mid-range wide receiver two, and we'll see in the new role that he plays if he can continue that kind of production and even further. I really like him a lot as a player. And he's produced so far since he's been in Washington with Terrell Pryor in the mix. You kind of like, you know, on paper, yes, they're worse than a year ago, but I can't complain about Pryor, Crowder, and a rookie that are a guy that'll be in year number two, who's basically a zero in year one, and see what you have out of it. I mean, they have been addressing the position. They haven't let it go. They just let some aging veterans go that were, frankly, high-priced as well. So you can justify it in a couple of different ways, but it's going to be up to Cousins to make those connections work. So we ended up getting a little bit off on a tangent in the NFL. It's okay. We'll talk a little bit more about MLB prospects after the break. We're back 30 minutes to go on the program. A little bit less. Fantasy Bagels and Baseball coming up after this with Tony Cincotta and Cha-Cha, then FanRag Fantasy Baseball with Al Melchior, Pete Considori, and Chris Pavona from the producers will be talking about a variety of stuff, including that TV show bracket. You guys check it out. Go to Spittin' Speeds is the is Dane Martinez's handle is Spittin', so that's SPITTIN speeds, SPEEDZ. Do they have to capitalize all that stuff, Pete? I think I know enough about Twitter, but do you have to do it just like that? Does speeds have to be in capital letters?
It doesn't have to be. It's just what he wanted.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So it's at Spittin' Speeds, SPITTIN, and speeds, all caps, SPEEDZ. But I'm sure if you type in Spittin' Speeds, you'll find them, follow them, and then you can get in there and vote on some of the polls that they have regarding the all-time TV show bracket. George, what is your favorite TV show of all time?
My favorite TV show of all time would probably be 24.
Interesting. You really are dedicated to that show. That's a consistent note from you. And Pete, what's yours?
That's tough. I'm going to go House because that's the only one I really watched a lot of.
Okay.
House was good. House was good. I mean, I could put the Shield up there with Michael Chiklis. That was fantastic. Sons of Anarchy. If you want to go old school, Magnum I thought was a great show.
All right. Well,
How about Married with Children?
I did like that show. I did like that show. I thought Ed O'Neill is funny. He's really good on Modern Family now, too, playing the sort of grandfather.
But Married with Children changed TV. I mean, that was the anti-Cosbys, for crying out loud.
Yeah,
they
really
went bananas.
It was. I'll give him credit for that. It was, the kind of dysfunctional family on full display on primetime television. So,
2 and a Half Men was about as raw as you could get.
That is true. I didn't really watch much of that, but
it was funny.
Very familiar with it. I would say that if I'm ranking mine, like network TV shows, growing up, I really liked Family Guy. I thought ER, actually, when ER was first on, that was a tremendous show. Really great. Great actors, great writing. I mean, the show was on for like, it was more than 15 years, I think. So, over time, it changed. But when George Clooney and that crew were first on, it was a great show. It really helped relaunch George Clooney's career, basically.
How about Miami Vice back in the day?
Yeah, really good. That was a kind of an edgy show, too. Edgier than some people.
That started a different kind of TV show. Starsky and Hutch from the 70s I used to love.
Yeah. I mean, the shows that I always waver towards, though, are 6 Feet Under, which I think is one of the best written TV shows I've ever seen. And I would say Sopranos is always going to be up there, and Mad Men for me. A few other shows in there, but those are the shows that I really sort of waver towards. You know, some dark storylines there, and stuff that I can really kind of dive into. As I've mentioned,
Walking Dead nowadays.
Yeah, you love that show. As I mentioned many times, I don't get to watch as many shows anymore. And no, I haven't finished Westworld. I am watching a show called Big Little.
I've given up with you on that.
I've watched 8 episodes. There's like 2 to go, so I'll get there. I didn't binge watch it as I promised I would. I would say currently I am watching a show called Big Little Lies. It's a miniseries on HBO. I'm watching that because my wife read the book, and it's one I get involved in with her. We don't cross paths on TV tastes and movie tastes very often, but this one's so far so good. It's pretty dramatic. It's got a lot of big time actors in it, and I think it's only like 9 episodes, so we'll be done in a few weeks' time. Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, Shailene Woodley, Alex Sarsgaard, a lot of, Laura Dern, a few other ones. I don't know if it's your cup of tea, George.
A good time.
It's a good.
It's not my cup of tea, cup of coffee, cup of soup, cup of hot chocolate. It's not my cup of anything.
Yeah, it's
Stanley
not.
Cup, World Cup.
Yeah, it's. Would I call it like a chick flick kind of thing? No.
I would.
Not really.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, whatever. I could suck it up and watch this one show, so I can watch it with my wife. And it's got pretty good drama in it too, and the acting's really good. And it's shot.
Do you ever watch Stargate?
I have no idea what that is, actually.
Well, I didn't really like the movie with Spader and Kurt Russell.
That
but
sounds
the
vaguely
show
familiar.
The TV show Richard Dean Anderson's pretty good. It's an old show, but. I kind of enjoy it.
Okay. Well, no.
A lot of snark from Richard Dean Anderson. It makes it funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. But in any way, I don't know how that started. Oh, yeah, Spittin' Speeds. Go to his handle and get through all the bracket with him. So as far as the other bracket is concerned, I haven't checked yet, George. I usually wait until after Sunday to see what the collateral damage is on my brackets. Did you even bother to fill one out? I know you don't watch, but, you know, these pools are going around. Did you fill out a bracket?
I mean, from a tourney?
Yeah.
No.
All right.
Didn't even think about filling out one.
Pete, did you throw in a couple of bucks and fill out a bracket?
I did not.
Jeez. God, you're that far removed? You guys are that far removed that you don't fill out a bracket?
I watched the Iona
like
game because
50 million brackets filled out, and you guys don't have any of them.
No.
Not a one. I would have my daughters pick out the teams.
Oh, you watched the Iona game. Well, that's good.
I did. I was very upset they lost.
They
but
did
I mean,
not win, yeah.
I'm going to be honest, I didn't expect them to win as much as I love my team. They're playing a great Oregon team, so.
Yeah, they're legit. So Okay. Well, back to the business at hand, George. We'll just get through a few more prospects before the end of the day. We talked, you know, unfortunately, Chris's article, and he's made a note. Alex Reyes is one of the potential breakout rookies. Obviously, he's staring down the barrel. I don't know if he had surgery yet, but he's looking at probable Tommy John surgery, and he'll miss the entirety of the 2017 season and most of next. We're still, that's what we're thinking, right? There's uncertainty.
Oh, yeah, he's done for this year. You're not drafting. I mean, even in a keeper in Dynasty League, he's already undergone surgery. Yes, that happened last month.
Okay.
But he's done for 17. Maybe get him back for part of 18. So now you're looking at 19 before you even really get what Alex Reyes can do. It's a shame. He was a top prospect. I was looking forward to watching him make the starting rotation, probably as the SP5 for St. Louis. He would have been very intriguing this season. The guy throws up to 100 miles an hour. We don't know what that'll be like when he comes back. Shame, but we move on. At least we found out about it early. He had the injury, I believe, in mid-February, right around Valentine's Day, if I remember correctly. Nothing you can do about it. That's what the bottom line is. It happened. It's over. It happened early. You should be able to adjust from it. So you don't want him for this year. And like I said, in a keeper league, it would depend how long I can keep him for. If it's 3 years, I'm not keeping him. I'm not drafting him in a keeper league this year, even if it's the last round. Like I said, he's out this year. Next year, there'll be some kind of major innings limit. So you're going to get 1 year out of him. Probably not worth it. I guess if you could take him in the last round and put him on when you have a DL slot, fine. But other than that, no. It's nothing to see here. Time to move on.
Yeah, I mean, he's 22. He'll be 23 later this season. So basically, he's going to be coming back when he's right about 24. Obviously limited last year, 46 innings pitched. He went 4-1 with a 1.57 in his five starts. He appeared in 12 games overall. The numbers all look good. But again, we'll just have to put him on ice. And as George said, see what you're looking at long-term for keeper leagues. Tyler Glasnow is the next guy he mentioned, starting pitcher for the Pirates. Long, lanky, right-handed fireballer with a sweeping breaking ball that can be unhittable when he's throwing his fastball for strikes. He has the stuff to produce impact fantasy strikeout totals, but he also generates a significant amount of weak contact. So, at his best, he's an impact must-start fantasy pitcher, and there have been some speculation. However, there's been some speculation that his command issues could land him in AAA to start the season as a possible late-inning reliever eventually. So, with their thinner rotation, your thoughts about Tyler Glasnow?
Well, that's the key there. Their rotation is thin. They really need him to take hold of a spot here and keep that spot. He did was in seven games last year. Really didn't impress all that much, other than he was more than a strikeout per inning. Always good to say, but his ERA was 4.24. His whip was 1.5. Oof. That's bad. That can't happen. That's got to come down considerably there. Probably minimum 20% that he's got to calm that down. So he's got to get better there. He's pitched okay so far in spring training, you know, and that's probably being a little nice. He's had some issues here. I think he is going to begin the season with the club, but if he struggles, you know, they're going to put him. They're going to send him back down. He will. I don't think he'll make the club as a reliever. It's either as a starter here or a starter in AAA.
I would have to agree.
I don't think they're going. Yeah. I don't think they're going to keep him in the bullpen here. That doesn't make sense. They need him to be a starter. But right now, I would put those odds at no better than 50-50.
He is 6'8", 220 pounds, George. 23 years old. He'll be 24 again later in the season in August. So still young, but I'm with you. That's not the type of guy with that kind of ability that I want messing around in different positions. I thought, you know, you're a Yankees fan and you remember this. They messed around with Jabba Chamberlain a whole bunch, moved him all over the place, and it was like he had to just leave New York to have any kind of success, and he might have been ruined permanently. Now, does he have the kind of ability that Tyler Glasnow has? Well, probably not. Jabba has found a role in Major League Baseball. In fact, they bumped Phil Hughes around a little bit too. I just never really appreciated the way that was done. So if I'm a Pirates fan, I'd rather him working out the kinks in AAA or working out the kinks here in a starting role. But I don't want to put him where he's pitching every other day and an inning at a time and, you know, not working through what the situation should be for a starting pitcher, correct?
It is correct. Plus, if you do that, then you don't build up arm strength. And now he can't rejoin the rotation when you need him. Like I said, right now, I think if we know Cole, Talion's going to make the rotation, Nova, Cole, and I think right it's between Glasnow and Hutchinson for that last spot, and I think right now Hutch is in the lead.
Yeah, I'm just, if you go to MLB.com and look at their depth charts, that's how they have it lined up right now. Cole, Taillon, Nova, Cool, Hutchinson, Glasnow. So we'll see. You know, there's still a couple of weeks to go, decisions to be made, but we will see how that plays out. We'll come back. We'll talk one or two more prospects before we hand it off to Fantasy Bagels. It's Mike and George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. And we're back. And I just got something disturbing sent to me during the break, George.
Cha-cha?
No. Matt Modica, our very own co-host on Saturdays, he sent out a tweet yesterday of a picture of him with a young lady from 17 years ago. They appear to be in a bar or party or something like that, and he's got bleach blonde hair. He sent it yesterday. I hesitate to retweet it, but it is disturbing, and I will have to talk about this. This might be an entire segment next week, how you go about making the decision to dye your hair blonde like that. It's sort of a what's the best way to put it without offending part of the audience. It's sort of like a kind of a high top gelled up situation, and it's also bleach blonde. It's not spiky, but it's like wavy and blonde. It's not good. So anyway, that's the deal. That's where I'm at. Pete sent it to me during the break, and I'm totally thrown off. So Tony.
Well, I got Tony Sincotta, who is tweeting me that, how about we talk about TV shows? How about The White Shadow?
That was a good show.
Yeah, that's even sports related, right? He was the basketball guy there. I watched it, not religiously, but I did watch it. He just passed away recently.
He did.
I forget the actor's name.
He
Ken
did.
Ken something or other.
Yeah. On the show, he was a former Boston College basketball player. So that's my connection. That's how I can work.
Oh, there you go. Look at that. It all comes full circle.
Well, this show takes place in Boston, I believe. So, you know, he's the white coach and African-American players. And Tony's saying, I had a very uncomfortable promotion of Spittin' Speeds. I talked about the damn tournament for like 10 minutes. That's a great promotion. He's got a new Twitter handle. I said it like 10 times. Tony's show is coming up next, Fantasy Bagels and Baseball with Cha-Cha. So there's his promotion. I'm comfortable with bagels. I'm comfortable with Spittin' Speeds. I'm comfortable with Dane. I love everybody. Everybody love everybody, as Jackie Moon
said. Does Tony really like an English muffin better than a bagel?
I don't know. I'd have to ask him that. I like
He's
English
from
muffins
Boston.
A lot.
I got to think he likes. So do I, but I
the bagels are terrible
bagel.
In Boston. That's the problem. The only place you can go is to go to chains, like a Brugger's Bagels or something like that. They have no like good bagel shops there. They just don't really exist. I mean, anybody, Chris Mitchell and everybody else will hit me up with saying like, you don't know about this one hidden place 20 miles outside the city. You're right. I don't. And I'm not going to go there because there's a good bagel place on every corner here. I've told people this before. I travel a decent amount for my other professional responsibilities, and I'll never have a bagel or pizza outside of New York. I just can't do it. I've done it too many times, and it's just a disappointment every time. So that's kind of where I'm at. In any event, getting back to a couple of more prospects, George, before we hit the road. Yoan Moncada, we've talked about him a number of times. Immense talent, but we feel like it could just take some time. I mean, keeper leagues, yeah, we're all in, right? But for if you're a redraft one-year league, you're looking at Moncada for his 2017 production. He's going to get playing time, but it'd be impossible to expect huge things from him right away.
I would agree on that. I mean, we love the ballpark, right? Eventually, when he is going to be a full-time player there, I mean, that ballpark is made for hitters. But where does he play right now? All right, he's not a middle infielder. We know that. He's probably a third baseman. He could make it there, but they still have Todd Frazier. For how long? You know, when does Frazier get moved? I think that will happen. I think he will be traded at some point this season, along with Robertson, maybe in Quintana as well. So it's going to happen, but the question is when. Does he play second base? What about Tyler Saladino there? Is he going to move him out? So that's my question there. When is he going to get playing time, full-time playing time? He's not tearing it up in spring training. I believe last I checked, he's batting around 200 with a bomb or two. I think he's got a couple of home runs, actually. So that's an issue as well. Does he deserve promotion right away? Does he need more time in AAA before they bring him up? My guess is he's not going to start the season with the White Sox, but it won't take long. Like I said, I think Todd Frazier will be moved, and as soon as that happens, Moncada is the next logical candidate to be called up, assuming he's not bombing in AAA. The kid has all the tools. It's just a matter of putting it all together. But as you mentioned, I'd much rather have him in a dynasty/keeper league than a redraft league with 2017.
In his last five games, he's 6-for-15, hitting his first two homers of the spring against Kansas City on March 15th and driving in 17 runs. So, you know, not going to start the season up, but as you said, that the Todd Frazier clock is ticking, right? Just a matter of time, we would think, for that.
They're going to move. Listen, if it's not nailed down in Chicago, it's going to get moved. They've already done that with Chris Sale. They want a truckload to get Quintana because they figure, although he's not quite the pitcher Sale is, he's pretty good, and his contract is super team-friendly. So they're going to move him at some point. Robertson, I'm shocked, hasn't been moved already. I think that's a move that's going to happen. Certainly by the deadline, if not much earlier than that, he'll have much more value to a contending team.
I thought that would happen this winter, to your point. I thought that was going to happen this winter.
I thought it would have happened already. There's been a lot of smoke at Washington. You know, the Nationals don't have a true closer on their team. You know, you got Sean Kelly, a couple other guys, but nobody who's been a closer for any length of time. It does make some sense. And I think if I'm the White Sox, I want to move Robertson as soon as possible. Because he's not that dominant reliever, you know, that true number one guy. He might lose it quickly. I want to move him, like I said, as soon as I can here. And Frazier's the same thing. He's really all power, not a whole hell of a lot else, other than a good clubhouse guy, good fielder. He's another guy that I expect to be moved. Really, he may be more of a deadline move, or a contending team suffers an injury at third base.
Yeah. So last guy we'll talk about before we hit the road is Bradley Zimmer, outfielder for the Cleveland Indians. There aren't a lot, according to Chris Mitchell, there aren't a lot of players in this rookie class that profile as five-tool talents, but Zimmer is one of them. His batting average might be a slight issue for owners, but he can provide double-digit homers and stolen bases without destroying you in average. He'll have to win the starting job this spring. Doesn't appear it's happened yet, but his tools and defensive ability make him the best option in center field for an Indians team that wants to win now. So, good lineup, stolen base opportunities. He feels like a statistical comparable to Byron Buxton in 2016 with a better average is about what you might be looking at. So it would be deeper leagues. He's a viable fifth outfielder potentially, but we don't have a carved out spot for him just yet.
And that's the problem. Cleveland might be the best team in the American League. If not, they're certainly one of them. So do they want to live with the ups and downs of a rookie in center field? Maybe yes, maybe no. I think on merit, he may be their best outfielder. Really, I mean, Chisenhall, Tyler Naquin, Brantley, we don't know how healthy he's going to be or when that shoulder's going to act up again. Brantley, if he's healthy and everything's back to normal, is their best outfielder. Bradley Zimmer, in my mind, should open up the field in center field. I don't think he will. I think they'll go with the guys who have been there longer. But like I said, Chisenhall and Tyler Naquin shouldn't be holding anybody back. And Zimmer's a top prospect. I think he should be playing right away.
Going on the Brantley thing for a minute, what if Brantley does stay healthy? What are your expectations for him?
Because there's two things here. One, stay healthy, as you mentioned. Two is define healthy. Is he back to the player he used to be? Or is that shoulder allowing him to play, but he doesn't have power anymore, can't drive the ball anymore? It's a shoulder injury. Not good for a baseball player. So, like I said, there's so many things to watch here. He's not playing in spring training. Or at least I think he's doing minor league games. We really haven't seen him yet. You know, we all say spring training is meaningless, and it is, but Brantley is a guy I'd want to watch play. You know, I want to see him play. I want to see him swing the bat. I want to see him drive the ball. There's a reason he's going so late in drafts, because nobody knows. You know, he's a huge risk. I don't mind you taking him late, and by late, I mean, even as an outfielder five, I'm okay with that. He's going to be in your starting lineup. But he's a guy you may have to realize you may have to move on from real quick if he doesn't have it anymore, if he's not going to be that player anymore. He has had quite a few setbacks with his shoulder, and I don't know if it's done. How many games, Mike, can you honestly think you can rely on him to play this year? 130? 140? That might be asking a lot.
That is a lot. I would think that would be a lot. Currently the 53rd outfield, current NFBC. 53rd outfielder being taken, 228th overall. So, as you said, pretty late in that outfielder five conversation. But, you know, with that kind of upside and the player he used to be, I think that's why you take that risk. But to expect that after a significant injury, then I think that is asking a bit too much. So, that being said, that's the deal with Michael Brantley. And the Indians, as you said, loaded. So they will have somebody like Zimmer there to pick them up if one of these guys falters or if Brantley is injured, frankly. Zimmer will be a pretty quick call-up, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I think, like I said, I honestly think he should probably start the season. But if they want to send him down to the minors for a little bit, give their veterans a shot, see if Chisenhall and then McQuinn could all of a sudden play better, or you know, play, just take it off to a hot start. I don't really have an issue with that. Maybe they want Zimmer to prove it to him a little bit for a month or 6 weeks. Once again, also the arbitration, or you know, super twos. Maybe they want to get rid of that, and they'll bring him up when they, after that deadline passes, which is generally somewhere between mid-May and early June. That wouldn't shock me either. Cleveland's not a large market team. They may go that direction as well.
Yeah, so good stuff from Chris Mitchell. Check him out on the rotoexperts.com exclusive Edge baseball package. Enter promo code FREERADIO. Check out for that discount. Lots of good content like that. Continue to review that as we keep going through the drafts. It's getting close. Towel Wars weekend next weekend. Georgia and I are going to be in Studio 34 live. Georgia, I want you to bone up on trivia. I'm going to hammer you next week. It's Fantasy Bagels and Baseball with Tony Cicada and Cha-Cha next.